Ray, when it comes to Gaza and what's going on between Israel and Gazans, right now it seems that they're changing their policy of sending weapons to Israel. And how do you see these change of policies on the part of the Biden administration? Is it going to have some sort of pressure on the Netanyahu administration, or it's all a political game for their 2024 presidential election?
Well, Nima, I think that what comes into play here is the moral example of the young students on our at our universities. A recent study has been done about the demonstrations, and the figure was 97% of those demonstrations are peaceful, nonviolent, okay? There have been agents provocateurs who have stirred up violence, but and especially on the UCLA campus. But for the most part, they've been principled. They're willing to go to jail for people against whom genocide is being practiced on the other side of the world, people who don't look like most Americans. Okay, it's a big thing. So what's Biden done? Well, there are various bombs or missiles that can be used, and some of them level a whole city block in places like Rafah. Well, Biden put a hold on those. Okay, he said we're not going to send this plane load of those kinds of missiles. What about the ones that only level a half a city block? Well, they got enough of those already. How about a quarter of a city? Yeah, we got enough of those. So what he has done here by pausing one shipment, okay, is trying to buy off these young students, well, buy off other people like me who feel strongly about genocide. I mean, hello, we should feel strongly about genocide, right? And, people can see through it. It's so transparent, okay? The rest of the stuff is already there. The Israelis are saying we're going to go ahead anyway, and they have a reasonable, I say reasonable expectation that the U.S. Congress will force Biden to back off even this one shipment, or maybe only a half as many bombs that level the whole city in Rafah. Now, it's pretty cynical, and one example of that is that this week, I believe it was on Thursday, the US administration had to report to Congress about whether Israel had, or the US had violated any laws having to do with preventing the shipment of arms to people doing the kinds of things that Israel did. Well, the State Department spokesman was so apologetic on Thursday. I watched him. He said, "Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, but it's going to be a little late." Okay, what do they wait? They wait till Friday night. Friday night is the ideal time to issue an important statement that they hope will slip under the covers. And this is what the report said. I just dug this out because I wanted to make sure I said it exactly. So, the report found that Israeli forces likely used United States supplied weapons in a manner inconsistent with international law. But the statement stopped short of identifying violations that would put an end to ongoing military aid. Whoa! So, inconsistent with international law. Well, I think that's what they say about settlers in the West Bank and elsewhere. This is inconsistent with international law, but don't worry about it. It's Israel, and so it's not going to put an end to military aid. The whole world knows that the U.S. has laws preventing this. And I have two examples, maybe from my own experience, that I could adduce here. In the middle 1970s, Turkey invaded Cyprus using U.S. supplied military weapons. Okay, they're still there. Okay, now what happened? Well, in those days, there were enough people in Congress that said, hey, there's a law against that. My God, we need to stop all aid to Turkey. And they did. Okay. So what did Kissinger do? Oh, he was up in arms. He says, Congress can't do this kind of thing. We'll lose all our intelligence collection as facilities in Turkey. They'll throw us out. And I was working for Director Bill Colby at the time, and we collaborated on a message to Kissinger. Look, just so you know, they could throw out all our ground-based intelligence facilities from Turkey. It won't matter a damn because we have these real fancy stuff coming online this month. We'll collect all this stuff far better and far quicker. So if you're worried about U.S. intelligence facilities, don't worry about it. Well, Kissinger wasn't worried about that. He was worried about the Turks being unjustly accused. Suffice it to say that what Kissinger chose to do, he called Ambassador McCumber in Ankara, and he said, look, withdraw all those intelligence and other units. And McCumber said, but they didn't ask us to yet. Do it. Do it. And then he went to Congress and said, see what happened? Congress renewed the aid. Now, what's the rest of the story? I was involved. I was, in effect, Colby's deputy for that on Western Europe at the time. And so I went to the State Department and listened to all these guys to do the policy implications, you know? And they were all up in arms. How could they do this to our favorite Turks? And I made the mistake. It was a good learning experience for me by saying, well, now look at it this way. There's U.S. laws against this. And if those laws are enforced and there's an embargo against a country that misuses U.S. arms, well, maybe other countries like Israel will have to have a lesson from that. Wow! They all turned on me. It's like, what planet did this guy come from? My God! And they said, oh, let's wind up this meeting. And I was asked to leave. I mean, maybe that was a little, no, it wasn't naive, it was factual. Maybe Israel would have taken a lesson from that. So that's one personal experience I had with respect to Israeli, how the sacrosanct nature of defending Turkey in the first instance here, but in the background, my God, how could anybody suggest that the Israelis couldn't do whatever they wanted without weaponry?
We know that the Arab states are so solid in their type of view toward the attack on Rafah. They're not accepting any sort of attack on Rafah. On the other hand, the Biden administration is forcing Netanyahu to not going along with that plan to attack Rafah. Do you think at the end of the day, what would be the result of these pressures on the Netanyahu administration? Are they going to attack Rafah, or are they going to consider all these forces, all these pressures that are coming from the outside?
Well, Nima, one has to remember that the last poll I've seen, and it's a month ago now, 68% of the Israeli citizens want to exterminate the Palestinians, want to drive them out of Gaza, want genocide. 68% of Israel. Now, I'm not talking about the Israeli government. I'm talking about Israelis. So Netanyahu and his coterie of rightists, they want that, and they have that support. Now, on the other side, about the same percentage doesn't like Netanyahu, right? They just as soon get rid of him. But, it makes sense in their view not to change horses in the middle of this very, very existential threat as they see it. So where does that leave us? I think, and this is just my opinion, that the Israelis are really good at asking forgiveness after the fact, not asking permission before the fact. Now, what Biden has done in delaying one shipment of extra special 2,000-pound bombs or whatever it is, the ones that knock out whole cities, that's a fly in the ointment. Congress has appropriated, I think, $16 billion more over the $3.8 billion every year that Israel gets, I think. And interestingly enough, and regrettably enough, Congress is up in arms now at even this little token delay of giving these great big bombs to Israel. So there are great pressures in Congress, great pressures with funders, great pressures with the Israel lobby in our country. And I think that Biden will be afraid to really, really put the screws on Netanyahu. And Blinken and Sullivan are not going to advise him to do that. They have enough weaponry, in my view. They're going to go ahead and do what they want to do in Rafah. And just remember, there are over a million Gazans driven south into Rafah. And now the Israelis are saying, okay, now this is not safe anymore. So you got to go here. You got to go there if you want to escape the worst of it. And we're going to get Hamas. Well, they're not going to get Hamas. Hamas is well dug in. And whether the Israelis go in or not, I think will depend in an equal measure on whether their forces are capable of doing that. They're certainly capable of bombing the hell out of civilians. Whether they are a match for Hamas, I just don't know. At last count, most of the Israeli brigades were drawn back to Israel to refit and retrain and get ready again. So my bottom line is they'll probably do whatever they think they get away with. And up till now, since 1948, they have been assured of getting away with whatever they think they have to do.
The UN General Assembly has just recommended to the Security Council to accept the Palestine's membership. Do you think at the end of the day, these attempts on the part of the General Assembly of the UN would put some sort of pressure on the Security Council, especially on the United States and the United Kingdom, together with France, to finally come to a common ground to find some sort of permanent solution for Gaza?
In ordinary circumstances, yes. But there's a kind of a bloodlust in West Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. I spoke of how Israeli citizens just want to do away with Palestine, not just Hamas, Palestinian. So there's an irrationality factor at work here. You saw, or most people saw yesterday at the General Assembly, how the Israeli ambassador representative to the UN put the UN charter in a shredder. My God, what was that supposed to be? And then he finished up and said, shame on you. Shame on us for not shredding the UN charter. What an act. What an act. The United States is now faced with a real dilemma. Do they veto again? Only 9 people voted against that General Assembly, because I think 143 nations or so voted for it, for membership. But the Security Council, of course, has to rule on that. So will the U.S. Be a loner again and say, no, we don't want Palestine to be a member, even though the public U.S. position is that, yes, there should be a two-state solution and so forth. And the rhetoric is all over the place. So, I guess what I would say is that I consider it an outside chance that the U.S. would abstain, just let that thing go through. But if they did, I'm not, they'd never vote for it, okay? But if they abstain, okay, that would put a little teeth on this momentary pause of these great big bombs going to Israel to knock down city blocks in Rafah. That would give a degree of a punch to what the U.S. might be determined to do in terms of fleeing, getting rid of this albatross around its neck, namely Israel. There's so much militating against that that I think that's just an outside chance, Nima. But we'll know soon enough at the Security Council. And if they don't abstain, and if they do veto, then that will just show that the U.S. is so isolated in a way never before the case. It's the founding of the United Nations. And then for the U.S. to rhetorically say, look how Russia is isolated in the world. Look how China doesn't have any ally. I mean, that'll become so transparently ridiculous that the world will look and they'll see a new United States who is not a superpower in the sense it used to be. And even worse for the United States, the weapons don't really work all that well, you know. The Russians have shown that they could pretty much do countermeasures against the most sophisticated things. The Russians are knocking down attack-em missiles now. The Patriot anti-air defense missiles have shown that they don't work or they can be destroyed. I mean, who's going to buy from the United States anymore? Well, I suppose we'll find enough customers. But, you know, even the military-industrial complex should be thinking about this. You know, I mean, yeah, we build F-35s, but they all cost $500 million, and they don't really fly really well in thunderstorms. Hello, who's going to buy those things unless we force them? And the days where the U.S. could force these things on our allies, they're diminishing and won't be along for very much longer. So even the profiteers on war could give this a second thought and say, well, the experience in Ukraine has not been a good sales technique for our machinery and for our weaponry. And take note of that. Maybe talk to Biden and say, look, even we would like to have you tamp this thing down before we're embarrassed still more.
We know that Turkey has put an end to exports to Israel. When it comes to the United States foreign policy toward this type of decisions on the part of Erdogan and his administration, do you think, are they going to sanction Turkey to force them to reconsider all those decisions?
Well, Nima, with all due respect to Erdogan, he talks a big game. And we'll have to see how this no more trade or no more support of Israel works out. There are very crucial pipelines. There are very crucial economic factors here that I'm not sure are covered by this ostensible strong stand by Erdogan. Remember that Erdogan, right when the Israeli genocide began, said, we're going to send flotillas of all kinds of ships with aid to the Gazans, and we're going to do this, that, and the other thing. And that didn't come to anything. So he talks a good game. I like the precedent that he set. I mean, this is one of the first tangible things that a country has done. And maybe Israel will listen in the future. But until now, with this possible exception, it's been the Houthis. The Houthis, my God. The Houthis, who have been really working havoc on the Israeli economy by endangering shipping to Israel and preventing it really through the Red Sea. And it's been the threat from Hezbollah. In other words, if it weren't the Houthis in the south and Hezbollah in the north, just north of Israel, then Israel might feel even more empowered to strike out. But they have to worry about a whited war. And so these are factors that some people who feel strongly about what's going on, genocide in Gaza, they're coming to the fore. What's lacking are people so beholden to the United States, like President Sisi in Egypt, like the Saudi Arabians, like the Jordanians, you know. Those people talk a good game, but they haven't done anything. And what has been surprising to me a little bit is that even though many of those countries contain a huge percentage of Palestinians, they can suppress them to the point where they apparently do not have any real effect on policymaking in places like Jeddah or Amman or Cairo. So that's been a really interesting lesson to me. These people are very dependent on other factors, care less about their Muslim brothers, and face their own problems within their countries, but problems that they have been able to overcome simply by suppressing their sizable Palestinian populations.